Talk of Gasoline Alley on 1070 and 107.5 The Fan is proudly brought to you by Hero.Loan. Hero.Loan is the new way to VA.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee. Harvested from Indiana farmland over a century ago, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is a simple 2.5 mile oval. Built with the original intent to serve as a test track for the newly formed automobile industry, the Speedway became a place where drivers could test limits of both speed and courage. In May of 1911, Ray Haroon won the first 500-mile endurance race, lasting nearly 7 hours, a feat marveled from around the world. In the century that followed, 66 other drivers have won the Indianapolis 500, creating the greatest spectacle in racing. But before you can take part in the race, you must first qualify for the Field of 33. Simply put, drive faster than everyone else. In the early days of qualifying, track speeds topped out in the upper 80s. Then Rene Thomas broke the 100-mile-an-hour barrier in 1919, and the race was on in pursuit of a
new track record.
Track announcer Tom Carnegie gave those words added meaning for more than half a century as legendary drivers continued to push the record to new limits. In 1977, pole sitter Tom Sneaver cracked the 200-mile-an-hour barrier. And the current track record of close to 237 miles an hour was set in qualifying by Ari Leyendijk in 1996. Today, drivers are almost 150 miles an hour faster than those who first took to the track at Indy a century ago. But the goal is still the same. Before you can race for glory in a checkered flag, you must make the Field of 33. And today is pole day, where 24 drivers push to achieve their dream of racing at the Indianapolis 500 in her celebratory centennial race.
How about that, Delta Force in more modern times? That was from the intro to Versus coverage of qualifying from 2011. Thanks to our buddy Taylor Rollins, who sent that to me. We were talking about that a couple weeks ago, that I thought we had used Delta Force here in recent years as part of the NBC Sports Group, and we did. And there it is with the great Bob Jenkins, who, as we speak, is hosting the qualifying draw. We'll get all into that as to where things line up. Fast Friday is in the books. We're ready to qualify for the world's greatest race starting tomorrow. I'm Kevin Lee. Kirk Cavan is here. Brad Huber is our studio producer. Thanks for joining us. It's Trackside. Trackside, high above the Art of Bricks at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Busy day today. Kurt, what did we learn on Fast Friday? You have to turn on your microphone.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to pull up some information that we might need, but Fast Friday is exciting as we normally see it. Honestly, I will start with this. I thought the speeds might be a little higher, actually. I was kind of thinking we might get to 232 or 233, but we got to 231.7 with Connor Daly, and about a mile an hour slower was Marco Andretti, and then we've got 12 drivers north of 230 miles per hour and another, probably 12 to 14 that are in the 229. So I think what we learned is, even though this is somewhat skewed by the fact that there were other cars moving around and therefore creating a draft that would inflate the speeds a little bit, I think we've got as good of a competition ahead of us as we've had in a while. This is going to be really fun to watch. The other thing that I think we learned is, at least I did, I must have talked to 15 teams this afternoon at different points, and almost every one of them said, "We're nervous." And I'm like, you all can't be nervous. There are only going to be three not make it.
I think you can be, and this is what I've been saying all week, that if you're not really solid in the top 20, you're nervous.
I understand that. I'm just saying it was just funny, the number of people. Normally you'd have, five or six or eight that kind of were nervous, but it felt like half the field was nervous. And a couple of them, I don't know if I want to say it, but this team has at least two cars in the top. I'll have to see when we get the page back and look at exactly where they're at. But this team has two cars that have consistently run in the top 12. Yeah, we're nervous. And I was like, wow. So I think it's going to be a really competitive field on Saturday.
So two ways to look at that. It's like
you know, a high school basketball coach still pressing with 4 minutes left and they're up by 20 because the coach is really nervous. Sometimes that's not quite the way it really should be, and from the outside you see it a different way. But in this case, you should be nervous because all it takes is drawing a bad draw and going at the wrong time, and it's the sun's been behind a cloud much of the day, and all of a sudden the sun pops back out in, you know, in that 20 or 30 minute span when your qualifying time comes up, or you get a gust of wind the wrong way, or you miss on the gearing for your one run. Okay, you can get more chances, but who knows how long the line is going to be, and maybe it's a long line past 5 o'clock and you're not sure if you want to withdraw. There's just so many different things can play into this, and at one point the top 31 were separated by half a second late in the day, so it's tight, and unless you're in the top 22 or so after the first run tomorrow, you're going to be really concerned that those that are behind you are not going to go back out and better their times, especially after 5 o'clock if it gets to be a little bit overcast, and you're not going to be able to put it in the barn all day.
No.
Unless, you know, I suppose if you're top, I don't know what that cutoff will be, and part of it will depend on what the gap is. It's not necessarily whether you're the top 22, but you're looking at times and speeds. But what kind of gap do you have? What do you think someone else can do? And you're going to be ready to go back out again anywhere that's, I think, outside the top 20, top 22. You're at least going to be prepared for that possibility.
Let me give you the schedule real quick tomorrow morning. 8 o'clock is the first half of the field. Those that qualify in positions 1 through 18 in the draw, which we don't have yet, by the way. That's still a lineup to be assembled as they're still drawing as we speak. Then from 8:30 to 9 is the second half of the group, and then all cars from 9 to 9:30. And the deadline to be in the tech inspection line is 10:30. That's important for the crews, guys who are wrapping up their business right now and getting ready to go back to the hotel or back to home. And then 11 o'clock starts qualifications, which will run till 5:50, and everybody will be guaranteed one chance. And you can make multiple runs tomorrow once you've established the line has gone through. And then if you want to, then it gets a little complicated, but if you want to withdraw your time, you can go right to near the front of the line, the fast lane, they call it. And if you want to stand on your time and just go again, you get in what's called the slow lane for the qualifying order, the line, and then you'll get your chance when you're next in line.
But you might not get that chance.
You might not get that chance.
The fast lane always gets precedence, so those that are not taking the risk and withdrawing their time have to sit there until the fast lane, either cars that are not qualified or those that are willing to withdraw their time, until that line is empty. And once you pass Gasoline Alley, you're in line and you're committed in that fast lane. It's not until you get up to the front of the line. So once you get out in that line, you cannot pull out of that line. They have basically withdrawn your time. The only way you would get the time back is if the track becomes unavailable. It rains, or there's a crash and time expires at 5:50, or just in general, time expires. So late in the day, if you're in that line ready to withdraw your time, if you don't get your chance, then you would get your time back. Another example that could come into play, especially on Sunday when there's a chance of rain, if you're on track and it rains. This could come into play tomorrow, but you're on track and it rains before you finish your qualifying attempt, you would get your original time back in that scenario. Some other often asked questions, so got a clarification on some things. So if it were to rain on Sunday, which, by the way, there's a really good chance, so tomorrow is going to matter. And normally you would say you just want to be in the fast nine. It doesn't matter whether you're ninth fastest or first, because that time is going to be wiped off, and then everyone in the fast nine gets one chance on Sunday afternoon. But as we've said, if it rains all day on Sunday, then they're going to revert for the front three rows to the Saturday times. So tomorrow might matter in that case. Now, not the case for the last row shootout. They will do the last row shootout on Monday and potentially even Tuesday. You look surprised.
No. Okay. No, I'm just thinking about what if it happens to be Tuesday or Wednesday.
They did say, Kyle Novak did say, now, if we get to, like, Wednesday, then we have to revert back to those times. So it's possible, highly, highly unlikely, but it's possible. If it were to rain in Indianapolis for three straight days, then the fastest 33 on Saturday could be your race lineup. Now, as far as Sunday, the priorities will be they'll give them a practice session. Before there's any qualifying, there will be a practice session. They'd prefer to split it into groups, so those in the last row shootout, those six cars, would get some time, preferably 30 minutes, and then the those in the fast nine would get some time. But the last row shootout takes precedence. So say it's raining all morning, and the first time there is an ability to get cars on track, first there would be a practice session, but the first qualifying would be the six going for the three spots. Then if there's time remaining, then you do the fast nine. If you run out of time, the fast nine reverts to the Saturday speeds. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay, so I'll make sure I'm explaining that correctly. So those are the storylines for this weekend. Now back to Saturday, here's the risk and the drama that I think we're going to see all day long. As you said, you can withdraw your time and go to the front of the line. Now, obviously, if you're 31st, you've got no problem withdrawing your time. You're going to do that. What if you're 29th?
Yeah.
So you're judging who's in line ahead of me, who's up there, do I think they can go faster? Paul told a story today on air where they withdrew his time, and it turns out he would have been fast enough, but they withdrew it. He didn't go faster. I think that happened to Jay Howard one year where they withdrew his time. And he didn't go faster, or maybe he didn't even get back through the line. I can't remember what the scenario was, but that's happened in cases before. So that's part one. Part two, just as risky in my mind, is, okay, you want to be in the fast nine shootout. You're 12th. You're 11th. Whatever. You think you're faster. I think Tony Kanaan was in this situation last year, just outside. Do we withdraw that time? Because that's probably the only way you're getting through that line late in the day. You will have to withdraw your time. It will never come open in the no-risk line. Do you withdraw a 12th-place speed that is safely in the show? Go out. What if you cut a tire like Alexander Rossi did last year? Or they were losing air pressure. That was the reason that he qualified 32nd, because they had a tire going down. Similar circumstance with James Hinchcliffe. If that happens, you're out. And yes, you get one more chance, but it is winner take all on Sunday. That's not sure. I'm not sure if that's a risk I'm willing to take if I'm just outside the top 10.
Yeah, I don't think.
After 5:30. Maybe I take that chance at 4 o'clock. Right?
Right.
I think once we get to 5 o'clock or so, if I'm safely in the field, I don't think I'm withdrawing to run for the fast nine in the final 30 or 40 minutes when that is my last attempt of the day.
Yeah, it's a tough call. There's just is so many scenarios that it depends on what your objectives are. It depends on how close you are. You know, it depends on if you went out there early and it was sunny and all of a sudden the cloud covers come on. And you, I mean, there's just so many scenarios.
Now,
what I can tell you is, anybody named Ed is pretty quick, and those guys will be fun to watch.
And what I was also going to say, even though I'm saying I wouldn't do it, I guarantee there is someone that will do that tomorrow.
Well, sure they will.
That will take that risk late in the day for the run for the pull. And we're reminded of Scott Brayton back in the day withdrawing a car. That's when you couldn't use the same car again, withdrawing a qualified car. I think he's one of the scenarios, and there have been others, to go back and run for the pole. So I think that's going to be fascinating. The way that plays out tomorrow, it's going to be hot. It's going to be dependent on the time that you go. Starting at 11 a.m., if you get an early draw, did Connor really draw number one?
That's what I heard. That's what he said.
Connor drew number one, so the guy who always cries about his bad luck is getting some good luck going on. Fastest today, and then he gets to go out, and I think that's huge. Going out at 11 a.m. tomorrow compared to sometime after 1 o'clock, this might be Connor's opportunity. He doesn't have the fastest pure speed. His was with a big toe, and I think on the no-toe report, he was 22nd today. But he may not have gotten that many chances. But going out at 11 o'clock is going to be a huge advantage tomorrow, because the track is going to be I really think, Kurt, only that first hour is an advantage. I think between, like, noon and 5, it's all going to be about the same.
Yeah, I think historically we've seen till about 12:15 or 12:30.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of how it gets to be. And, I mean, you think about how normally it is in the daytime. When it gets into the, you know, that hour, 12:30, 1 o'clock, then it really does start to heat up. But you've got about 60 to 75 minutes typically before the track really heats up. Now, having said that, this new surface holds the heat a little bit more, and that may kind of change things. So you're already going to be warmer with this track, with the way the surface is compared to years past.
We took note today, looking at it around 4:30, 4:45. The track temperature was 116. By 5:50, it had dropped to 106. So it is going to be better in that final 20, 30 minutes tomorrow if you can maneuver yourself to get a chance. And that's why those that are 25th on back are going to be really worried tomorrow, because you can expect somebody that's not far off to find more speed if they get a chance to go out 5:30 beyond tomorrow. As far as pure speed today, you mentioned Ed Quick. It's Ed Jones again, and it's not just today. It's every day this week. He was the fastest by himself at 230.106. Ed Carpenter, this is on the no-toe speed, meaning no one within 10 seconds in front of him. And I guess they've recalibrated that now to go to 10 seconds.
They did yesterday.
Rather than 7 or 8 seconds. Carpenter, his teammate and boss, next, 229.879. Spencer Pigot doesn't show up on here. He shows up 35th and last, but the team told me they're confident that's a true lap over 230 as well, because I think it was Charlie Kimball that pulled out at some point on the last, at the very end on the Art of Bricks, and technically was within 10 seconds, but they don't feel like they gained anything, and I'm believing them because the two team cars are just as fast. So the Ed Carpenter Racing Chevrolets are the best right now. Alexander Rossi was third quick. Will Power, fourth quick. Simon Pagenaud, fifth quick. Those are no surprises. Graham Rahal was sixth, but he wasn't as happy in the middle of the afternoon as he was earlier in the day. Then Marco Andretti, seventh. Scott Dixon, Joseph Newgarden, Colton Herta, top 10. You have to look at the other end of things. So I mentioned Pigot. They're better than where they stack up, 35th. No shocker that Patricio Ward is down near the bottom after they work back to confidence. Backup car was a road course car, still painted up like Max Chilton's car. He was 34th today. Ben Hanley, 33rd. Dragon Speed, new team. We've talked about their story. They're one of the ones that you have to pin as the ones in most risk of making the race. Sage Karam, 32nd, but he had a recovery. I don't know if you saw the interview
I did
with him. So I'll tell the story. I had just gotten back on after a little break, and for an hour and a half, I wasn't paying that close attention. So I didn't know that he was in that much trouble. And I saw him walking through Gasoline Alley and with his dad, and I stopped and said, hey, can we talk to you on the air? Sure. Walking back. And then before we did the interview, I said, so I haven't been following. Have you been out? How are you doing? He said, no, we're not good. We're worried. And that was about the end of it. And then I talked to him on the air. Oh, and by the way, while I'm standing there waiting for him, his PR representative, Tom Blattler, our friend, comes over and says, what can I help you with? And I said, well, I'm going to talk to Sage. And he said, oh, okay. Has he agreed to that? I think Tom was a little surprised that Sage so readily agreed to do the interview, considering that he was spooked. And we learned he was spooked right there. So what they did is they put J.R. Hildebrand in the car. And we debated that a little bit in the booth, and my thought was, I understand I should defer to the drivers on that, but I want someone to tell me the car's okay. And JR told him the car was okay. He got back in and put his foot down, and I just saw a tweet from Sage a little while ago. He's comfy now. So it's amazing how quickly it goes back and forth like that, but there was a little while this afternoon where I think he was really worried about what was going on.
Yeah, he was one of many that I had a chance to kind of gather information from in that team. But, yeah, it'll be one of the more entertaining qualifying sessions that we've seen in a while, because I really think that there's as many people that think they have a shot at the front nine as there are people who think they're in peril. So
that's about right.
It really goes both ends of the spectrum. And the line that's kind of in the middle, shoot, they're capable of being either direction in my mind, but I think we pretty well have a sense for who's in danger of being in the last six, but or at least some of them. But there's a lot of people nervous going to sleep tonight.
So I'm just going to look from backwards on, and I think the time charts, generally speaking, are right of who is in jeopardy right now.
Who should be concerned?
I would probably not have put Pato O'Ward in that group a couple of days ago, but that's how it happens. You have a crash, it sets you back. You're not in the car that's perfectly prepared. That's how things like this happen. So he's in that group. I think Max Chilton might be in that group. He hasn't been all that quick this week. I expect him to make the race. I expect him to be in the top 30, but that's one I'm sure that's a little bit worried right now. Fernando Alonso was just in here a little while ago. He confirm what
he said. I am nervous.
Yeah, exactly. We all know that. If you don't say that, you're lying. They should be nervous at this point. Ben Hanley, obviously, they knew that going in. They, I'm sure, fully expect that we're going to have to fight it out for one of those last three spots. Their race is this weekend. Likely, their race is at 12:15 on Sunday. Oriel Servia hasn't been super fast all week, so I'd be a little bit concerned if I'm him at this point. You know, maybe Jordan King. I think Jordan has said, I feel pretty good alone. I'm dealing with a little bit of issue. And let me go to the quote sheet because I put this in the notes, and I want to make sure that I have that accurate, because there was in one setup where he felt okay, and in the other, okay, he said his no-toe time is not too bad. He's a little bit more worried about traffic. So that was as of last night. So he has a good enough balance that he thinks it's okay for the race. You know, Pippa Mann has been pretty solid. I've talked to Tim Clawson. I've talked to John Comiskey, and I've seen some interviews with Pippa. They're not bad, but I'm sure they're still worried. Naturally, you're going to be worried until you're in the show. Just like the Dragon Speed team, their race is just to make the Indianapolis 500. And I even joke with Tim. I said, you know, worst-case scenario, you get in that last row shootout, you're going to get all kinds of national television coverage. He says, I don't know. That'll be great for the partners. I don't want it. Yeah. I want to be in the top 30. Right. I want to be in tomorrow running on NBC Gold, and then we'll see you on race day on NBC on the 26th. So who else? Those are the ones that most come to mind. Oh, you know who else? Is Felix Rosenqvist.
Yeah.
Do I think he'll be there? No, because it's Ganassi, and I think they have a plan, and they're being conservative, getting him back up to confidence, and they're likely going to get two qualifying runs tomorrow. But when you're young and you crash, there's no more guarantees, and the common denominator is the people that have crashed this week all don't have that much experience.
Yep.
What? Fernando Alonso, Patricio Ward, Felix Rosenqvist.
Kyle Kaiser.
And then today, did I leave one out? And then Kyle Kaiser was the big one today. Now let's talk about their team. So my first fear was, I knew they had a backup car, but is Ricardo just going to say, you know, as we said, this was the big risk. It's one thing to try to put it in the show without a sponsor, but if it crashes, you're on the hook. Now, it's possible that part of the arrangement with the driver was, and I don't think that Kyle brought money, or if he did, he didn't bring a whole lot. He's basically chosen by the team while they look for sponsors, but it's possible there's an arrangement there that, okay, we're going to field you, I'll try to find sponsors, but you're responsible for crash damage. Those types of things are fairly common in junior formula racing and sometimes even in IndyCar level racing, so maybe that's why Ricardo immediately was saying, I need to go back and talk to my driver, not only to see where he's at health-wise, mentally, does he still feel like he can get it done? And it may be even financial that, you know, Kyle's got to, if that's the case, say, all right, can I raise the funds to pay for this crash damage? And am I willing to be on the hook for more crash damage? Who knows? That's a scenario that is in play with some drivers. I did hear that Ricardo feels like he's already secured some funding, so that's good. And they are preparing their road course car that was used at Circuit of the Americas and plan to be back out on track tomorrow. So it's a great story. I think any of these Junco's, Dragon Speed, Clawson Marshall Racing, any of those making the race is a fantastic human interest story.
Yep.
But if they make it, that means one of the big teams is out. And I include like the Dreyer and Reinbolds. I consider that a big team, even though they're a one-off team. So that's high drama as we get into Saturday and Sunday. We'll get to some Twitter questions that you may have if you've sent it in since 6 o'clock or so. I'll run back to the last hour and a half. And Jim Aiello of the Indianapolis Star is going to join us here in just a little bit as he prepares his stories for tomorrow. And plenty more to come from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Oh, we've got trivia questions for tickets to Road America. Let me pull that up. It's a pair of passes for the events coming up at Road America, June 20th to 23rd is, I believe, when it is. And our question tonight is, in what year did the NASCAR Xfinity Series return to Road America? 317-239-1070. 317-239-1070. If you'd like to go see IndyCar at Road America in June. Back with more in a moment from IMS.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
And Donald Davidson is already here, along with Tony Donahue. 8 o'clock is when we talk nostalgia and the history of the world's greatest race and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Congratulations to Nicholas Gagnon. Did I pronounce that correctly, Brad? I hope so. Of Indianapolis, congratulations. You will be going to Road America coming up on June 20th through 23rd to see IndyCar at the more than 4-mile course. Very cool opportunity for you. And we'll be giving away 2 weekend passes for that June 20th to 23rd pass to see the stars of IndyCar at the Rev Group Grand Prix, presented by AMR, a tribute to first responders. Youth age 16 and under get in free at Road America, and all active responders get in free with their ID. Tickets at roadamerica.com. By the way, the answer to our question was, when did Xfinity first come to the 4-mile-plus long road course? 2010. James Davison, one of the competitors in this year's Indianapolis 500, has done quite well at Road America in the last couple of years. Big event, so we had Jimmy Johnson here yesterday. Everybody wants to come out and see what's going on. I walked down to turn one because it was really my first time in the pits just to get a feel of the cars. It always shocks me when I haven't seen cars on the oval for a while of the pure speed, and I walked down there at the end of the pit entrance to watch them go through, and I turn around. Who is standing next to me? Dale Jarrett. Chatted with him for a little while. He's not had the chance to come to Indy, see the Indy car, so he's here today and tomorrow a little bit. So cool to visit with him. He's been enjoying himself as well. Twitter questions at KevinLee23. Oh, I know one other news item I wanted to mention today. We have a pace car driver. We're always asked about that, Kurt.
We are, and his name is quite familiar, Dale Jr., iconic race car driver, I saw someone wrote, so I guess we would call him iconic.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. It was just funny to, you know, to use that term, but it'll be a popular pace car driver. He has been a pace car driver here before because he drove in the NASCAR race.
The Brickyard? Was that last year?
I believe that was last year because he retired the year, you know, at the end of the previous year, so Dale Jr. will drive the pace car, and big thrill for him. You know what I actually thought? Now, I don't know if this is the way it'll be, and I'm sure it'll still be a big thrill for him to do this. I would almost think he'd want to be able to physically watch the start of the Indy 500. You know, he won't be able to. He'll still be in the race or in the pace car. But it just crossed my mind that, you know, his first time to be here, he might actually want to see the start. But
well, sometimes your bosses tell you what you're going to do at the start of the race. Maybe it was suggested to Junior.
No, I think
we'd really like you to drive the pace car. So okay.
And I think it'll be a great honor, and he'll really enjoy it, and he'll be wound up from. I would think it'd be a little nerve wracking, no matter what race it is and no matter what role, you know, a big crowd like we'll have here on May 26th. But anyway, he will drive the pace car and then get out of the car, and he'll have cars coming zooming past him within about 40 seconds after he comes to a stop.
Now, I know the first reaction was, why isn't it Mario Andretti? Was it, Jim, that you talked to Mario? Someone had Mario on record saying, I don't want to drive the pace car. I want to drive the two-seater.
Yeah, he likes the two-seater.
And for a couple of reasons, he likes the two-seater. And by the way, he gets paid to drive the two-seater. He has a very good gig with Honda driving the two-seater, so that's one of his jobs right now, and he gets to go faster in the two-seater, so
right.
He likes doing that. So it's really almost like you have two pace car drivers, and his inclusion in the two-seater at the beginning of the race will be well noted on the broadcast as well, and there will be much made of Mario Andretti during the 50th anniversary of his win. So that's cool. More big news coming for the 500. Couple of Twitter questions. Joseph says, idea for next year, the qualifying draw that's happening tonight should have been streamed on NBC Sports Gold, even if it was without commentary, just a guy with a camera. Could be. It could be on IndyCar.com. It's been in the past. I did see that IndyCar put it on a live Twitter stream type of deal. So, you know, I know we televised it maybe back in the Versus days a few years ago, and it wasn't really a good television show. It's not the same as it used to be. It lasts a long time because you draw for all the backup cars, and oftentimes the people doing the drawing, no one knows who they are. It's just, hey, this is my neighbor Bill, and, you know, it's not like the team owner or the primary sponsor all the time. It's sometimes it wasn't a fantastic television product. Now, what you say there, just with no audio, that's a suggestion we could make if they can throw that up there. It's not as simple as that, though, because when it's on NBC Sports Gold, there's still got to be somebody in the truck, and, you know, there's still the camera guys have been out here 8 hours or whatever. So somebody has to run that, so it's not as easy. But it's noted, and we've told the vice president of communications. We passed it along to him.
I did, anyway.
Yeah, you passed it along to the vice president of communications to see what we can do to get some more streaming of that coming up next year. We answered, I think, Chicago racing fans' question, what teams are in the greatest danger of going home. I think we talked about that in the last second, in the last segment. I saw one about Connor in here. Oh, Carr McFast. One asks, will Connor get to keep the ride for the rest of the season? Because hashtag wow.
No, I don't think so. But if he wins the Indy 500.
If he wins the Indy 500, we'll see him in more races. And that has been part of the design. They've already been working on potentially doing more races with the U.S. Air Force. So a good showing in the 500 will help the cause in that. And obviously winning the thing would, I think, almost guaranteed that we're going to see him at least other times the rest of the year. But really what you're working on is next year. It's tough to get corporations to immediately just write a check to the point where you can get in the race car 2 weeks later. You have to start budgeting for 2020 at this point. So that's what he's doing as we move forward through this part of the season. Have we seen any final draw yet? Do we
no,
have
I'm
that?
Looking.
That's still not finalized at this point. I just refresh my email. We don't have that. So it's going to be hot tomorrow. So it's going to be slick. And I still don't know that everything we've seen is really going to tell us a whole lot. The only thing I think I know, it's like a Peter King column, the things I think, I feel pretty confident that the Ed Carpenter Racing Chevrolets are good.
That's about the only thing I would bet on.
I feel confident that Alexander Rossi's car,
I would agree with that,
is strong. I feel confident that Will Power will be in the Fast 9.
I don't feel as confident.
I feel I'm going to say that. I understand what you're saying, because the Penske's, they did more work today. They stayed out long enough to make me think that they're not 100% satisfied, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. I picked Power winning the pole coming into the weekend, more just as a sense of the guy's won 56 poles, but not won this one. So it's going to happen. But, boy, it's hard to pick against Ed Carpenter Racing. Ed Jones win the pole?
That would be a great story. I think Ed Carpenter is going to win the pole. And I'll tell you, somebody else that I think has a really good shot at the front row, although he didn't have the best of days today, and that's Sebastian Bourdais.
Yeah.
I think that's a possible front row that you would not have expected, you know, going into the month predicted. But that guy has been better than people realize here the last couple, 3 years. And I look for good things for him tomorrow.
All right, we'll get some thoughts from Jim Aiello of the Indianapolis Star in just a moment. Stay with us. Trackside from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on 1070 The Fan.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Trackside continues from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, just ahead of Donald Davidson and Tony Donahue coming up in a little bit. We like to bring the journalists in to chat and find out what they have going on. And, well, the journalists are actually doing their job right now, writing their story. So I sent Kurt back a few rows here in the media center. Take it away with Jim Aiello of the Indianapolis Star.
Thanks. We've had a chance now to catch up with Jim Aiello of the Indianapolis Star. We heard a lot of things this morning. We had Team Penske start off the morning with a press conference, followed by the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan crew, and then the Chip Ganassi team. It's always nice to kind of start kind of Fast Friday and the qualifying weekend with press conferences like that. What are some of the things maybe that you heard from any one of those groups of people today that you just found interesting?
Well, we had a lot of talk. I mean, honestly, it was one of those topics that popped up again, as always, is the locked in entries for the full-time teams. And Roger Penske pretty much stood by what he had been saying for the last few months, since last year, really, that that's what he thinks that the full-time teams deserve, is that if they help carry the series and the show the whole year, they deserve a guaranteed spot in the 500, which no one will underestimate how big of a part of their budget that is. So Roger talked about that. We also heard from Chip and Bobby Rahal and Graham Rahal about this. They all kind of chipped in different ways about it. Chip said he kind of hedged his bets a little bit, I thought, on that. The first thing he said was he's okay with the locked-in entries for full-timers, but he also said if it's truly the fastest 33, then he's also okay with that. So it seems like either way for him. I know he has a little bit. He seems to have a little bit of an issue with the current setup of qualifying right now, because it's like, technically, you could have one of the six cars fighting for those last three spots be faster than the car that qualified 10 through 30. So he thinks, in theory, it couldn't be the fastest 33. I think that probably won't happen, but I understand what he's saying. And then finally, yeah, we heard from the Rahal guys, and Bob Rahal pretty much said, hey, I missed the show. I sucked it up and dealt with it, and I think other guys should have to, too. And I know Graham feels the same way.
Yeah, the Rahal bunch were the most kind of historical in nature in saying that, you know, it's you know, this is what we signed up for, and we want the drama. And without the drama, then maybe it's not the same qualifying format. So it was interesting. We saw Roger Penske be all in one direction, Rahal being all in a different direction, and then Chip, as you said, kind of hedging his bets. But for this race, we know that the format is that the first 30 essentially will be locked into the show on Saturday, tomorrow, and then whatever's left will be determined on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a fascinating way to see. I know a lot of people have kind of looked at it as one way or the other, but this is kind of that, well, what about, let's see how this works first. I know I talked to Jay Fry about this last week, and I said, you know, a lot of the owners have been calling for locked-in entries. He's like, you know what, why don't we got a new format. Let's see how this works, because the second day kind of builds in that protection for a team if something goes wrong. Say, like, you know, don't have to go back very far to look what happened to Arrowsmith-Peterson Motorsports last year and James Hinchcliffe. If that happens again this year on Saturday, well, they still have a chance to recover on Sunday and make sure they're in the show. And, you know, I've heard from a lot of guys, I've talked to a lot of one-off entries, and they say, hey, if a full-time team can't figure it out in 2 days, then you might not belong in the show. So it's going to be really interesting to see who is on that bubble on Sunday. Well, and also, I think it's going to be interesting to see who's fighting for the fast nine. I think one of the only things that seems assured is that Ed Carpenter and his team will be fast, as always.
Yeah, I think so, too. Maybe a surprise for that fast nine might be Charlie Kimball, who's looked really good, too, by the way. That would not be somebody you would immediately put in that fast nine possibilities, but that he's run really well. We start to look at, obviously, Kyle Kaiser and Junco's had a big crash today, and they're going to be behind the eight ball as we move into tomorrow and then Sunday. I think maybe what we're talking about is, and still, and this is not surprising, that the one-off teams are probably more likely to be in that last six grouping than the full-time entries.
I think you're probably right. I mean, that was going to be true no matter what of the qualifying format, right? Was that these one-off teams, like I said, I spent a lot of time this week talking to these guys about the disadvantage of coming in the middle of May, coming in cold and trying to figure out what you're doing. And then they've talked about how not turning laps, even though there's no ovals this year ahead of the Indianapolis 500, but not turning laps and gathering that data does make it tough. I think some of the teams that we might see, I mean, I think the one that everybody wants to hear us talk about, I'm sure, is McLaren. McLaren has really struggled their first few days of practice here. They weren't on track on Thursday. They got back on track today, obviously, but they haven't been able to kind of get through their Indy 500 program, as Gilles Deferrin said at the conclusion of the day on Thursday, and said, yeah, this is a significant blow to what we've done. However, I talked to Trevor Carlin, who is, you know, obviously they have a partnership with these teams, with McLaren. He's not hitting the panic button. Nobody at McLaren's hitting the panic button yet. They think they'll have enough speed to make the show. Might not be in the fast nine, but they also don't think they'll be on the bubble. So there's a couple teams that should be interesting. The Dale Coyne Racing team has been a little bit interesting. Santino Ferrucci has had some pretty sluggish, I would say, no-toe speeds. So maybe he's on. I mean, it hasn't been exactly what I'm sure they're looking for. But those are the ones that kind of popped to my mind. I'm sure I'm missing somebody.
Well, you've there are obviously some others. There's a lot of them probably in that 25 to 36 range, and you know, obviously you got 10 or 11 cars that in number wise could be there, but probably a lot more when you factor them all in. Jim Aiello joins us. You also spent a lot of time in the morning press conferences trying to get people to discuss whether the increased bumping that we'll see in not only this year but last year should help attract more interest. I thought it was interesting, and maybe this is more where I come from, that it's that the allure of Indianapolis has been more about the speed and the increments of speed. Did you come away from answers with these guys feeling differently, the same, or get a direction for how the veterans at least feel?
No, I didn't expect that answer. I think when Graham Rahal, he kind of jumped in, and I was talking, there's been so much passionate talk about bumping on Twitter, and you know, maybe I shouldn't base all my information on Twitter, but that's what you see. So many people really are fastest 33, and we're going to keep bump day sacred and all those things. And I said, now that we have the return of that, we had it last year, Graham, do you think that we'll see a bigger crowd at Indianapolis to watch it? And he said, I don't know. He said, for me growing up, and I think for a lot of fans, the big allure was the speeds, trying to see who was going to break 200 miles an hour the first time and who was going to break Ari Leyendijk's record. And unfortunately, what he said was, we haven't really had that competition for speed yet recently. We've been kind of floating around that 230, 231, 232 in terms of who was sitting on the pole the last few years. There really hasn't been a threat to Ari Leyendijk's record of the last few years. I think he said if we get back to that point, if we have more power in the cars and they let it loose a little bit, then that would be kind of a fun thing to bring back to the speedway. Obviously, safety remains IndyCar, I think, an IMS's highest priority. And when you give these cars more power, as we saw today with Kyle Kaiser, give the boost, and that hit was pretty significant that he took. So there's that balance of, you know, you're chasing speed, you're chasing records, and versus trying to keep everybody safe. But it's a point well made. It was not something I had actually considered going into the day.
So this is your third Indianapolis 500 to cover for the Indianapolis Star and IndyCar.com. See, I know all the bullet points I'm supposed to hit, the talking points.
You just said IndyCar.com. It's IndyStar.com.
All right, so I'm actually breaking my own habits. But so IndyStar.com, yeah, I only had a few letters to change. But you just mentioned something before we came on the air, and I think it's a valid point. There is so much that happens, obviously, on the racetrack that all of us are watching. But for you as a reporter, and I certainly know this feeling, you're chasing a lot of things that don't have anything to do with the actual speed of the race cars.
It's incredible. I said we were talking about off track. I felt like I'm watching race cars less this week than I have all season, because during practices at all the other races, you're really focused on what's happening on track. Of course, you're chasing some stories and rumors here and there, but you can really focus on what's happening. But it's Indy. There's so much history here, and there's so many features to write and stories to tell. And I feel like, you know, I've been working on a couple Mario pieces that have taken me a long time to put together. And so sometimes you're chasing that, or, you know, there's the story about McLaren maybe looking to buy a team as opposed to starting their own IndyCar team. So you're chasing that because this is the first time we have access to McLaren all the time. So there's just so many things that happen around Indianapolis, so much intrigue and fascination that, oh yeah, there's cars on the track. We have to keep an eye on those guys because, you know, that's going on. So yeah, no, it's a fascinating month to try to cover, and a very tough month to try to cover. So I'm thankful that IndyStar brings out a few extra people to help me out during the month, because otherwise I think I'd just drown in it all.
I got to tell the listeners, you've come a long way since our little lunch a few years ago when we sat there on the north side of Indy and talked about what it was like to cover this sport. It's been, it's certainly probably been a lot more than you expected, and yet it's pretty comprehensive.
It's incredible. I mean, I think if you had told me 3 years ago, and I feel like I'm touting my own story, but I if you had told me 3 years ago I was going to go fly out to Nazareth and join Mario Andretti and walk around Nazareth Speedway and just talk racing history with him, I would have told you you're crazy, and I never would have thought I would have gotten to that point. But it was just so much fun to do that and to have that experience. And so, yeah, I feel like in 3 years it feels way different than it did the first year. I felt like I had finally have my head above water just a little bit this year.
Well, Jim, we got a lot more to come. We've obviously got 2 days of qualifying, and I'm not going to ask you to spoil and make your pick, but you'll probably have it online before you'll break that story. But do you have a pick for the pole?
For the pole? Oh man, that's a good question. Does anybody bet against Ed Carpenter these days?
That's who I'm going with.
Yeah, I think Ed Carpenter is the choice. I mean, I think Ed Jones and Spencer Pigot have shown some speed, and I do think that we've seen Alexander Rossi show off a lot of speed and no toe, so I think he could be a guy in there too. But I'm sticking with Ed until he proves me wrong.
Yeah, I'm going with Ed as well. But I would not throw this one out without really some fanfare, and that's Sebastian Bourdais. I think he'll be really quick as well.
That guy knows how to qualify around here. Obviously, he had that incident a couple of years ago, but man, was he flying. And I think he knows now. I mean, I remember talking to him before. He was saying I've never gone that speed before. I didn't really know how to handle it. Now he knows how to handle it. If he's got that kind of pace again, he'd absolutely be a threat for the pole.
Well, Jim, pace yourself, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks very much.
Jim Aiello, Kurt Cavan. So that's Kurt's replacement at the Indianapolis Star, now the beat writer covering IndyCar. All right, the draw is in as of about 10 or 15 minutes ago, and as we mentioned and had heard, Connor Daly draws the first chance to go out at 11 a.m. tomorrow, and boy, we've got some fast ones going out right at the beginning. I feel a little more confident. There are a few that are going to have a chance at the Fast 9 because of the luck of the draw. So Connor's got a chance to get in there, but some guys that are really fast. Spencer Pigot draws second. Alexander Rossi draws third. The backup car for Sato is next. Ed Carpenter is fifth, really fourth. So all of those guys, and Sebastian Bourdais, Kurt, who you mentioned, is going out early as well. All of those are going to go out in the first 30, 35 minutes. Tony Kanaan next, Marco Andretti, Charlie Kimball has been fast. Will Power should go by the end of hour number one. Those are the ones. Those are the fast guys coming up. You have to get into later in the day before you have the other fast guys' advantage there.
Yep. It'll be a fun qualifying session, and we'll see who ends up in the back.
A bunch of coverage on 1070 The Fan tomorrow. Make sure you're tuned in for that. And it's on the Internet tomorrow. So make note, if you're thinking and you're on the border for purchasing an NBC Sports Gold package, that's the only way to see most of qualifying tomorrow, 11 until 5. There's a lot of Preakness coverage on NBC and NBCSN tomorrow. So 11 until 5 tomorrow, NBC Sports Gold, 5 to 6 on NBCSN. Remember, the gun is at 5:50 tomorrow. And then Sunday qualifying from noon until 3 on NBC, Last Row Shootout and the Fast 9. And then we finish up from 3 until 6 with that practice session on NBCSN and another practice session on NBCSN noon to 2 on Monday. Thanks to Kurt. Thanks to Brad Huber back in the studio and everyone else for joining us. We'll see you Monday night at 7 here on Trackside 107.5, 1070 The Fan. Donald is up next.